Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tariteh Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the Mishnah. In the Mishnah yesterday we saw that a person who was standing in Rishut Yachid can move objects in Rishut Rabim, or vice versa, a person standing in Rishut Rabim can move objects in Rishut Yachid. The Mishnah had one qualification to that statement, which was that if you are standing in Rishut Yachid and moving objects in Rishut Rabim, you may not move them more than Dalet Amot Rishut Rabim. There are two issues when you have movement in Rishut Rabim. One is you may not move an object from Rishut Rabim into Rishut Yachid. The additional issue is that you may not carry something in Dalet Amot in Rishut Rabim itself. So here the Mishnah says, even though we're going to let you carry when you're standing in Rishut Yachid in the Rishut Rabim, we don't worry about the fact that you're going to bring it back into the Rishut Yachid. Nevertheless, we do worry about the fact that you might move it more than 4 Amot. So be careful. You may not move that object more than 4 Amot in Rishut Rabim. Now the Gemara says about that, Uvad Shal Yotzi Chutz, Ha Hutzi. What happens if a person does move it more than 4 amot b'shut rabim? Chayav chatat. Sounds like a person would be culpable in that case. He'd be chayav chatat. He'd be an isur doraita for moving an object more than 4 amot b'shut rabim. Lema misayile the rova. Maybe this should be a proof or a support for the position of rova which we've seen before. Dama rova. Mavir chayfetz mitzchilat arba l'sof arba. A person who moves an object from the beginning of 4 amot to the end of 4 amot. Ve'viru derech alav. And he moved it alav chayav. In that case, he's chayav chatat. It's an isur doraita. Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to what this means. Rashi says Derech Alav means that he moved it above 10 tefachim. He lifted the object up, brought it above 10 tefachim, moved it over, and then placed it down 4 amot later, but he moved the object on a horizontal basis above 10 tefachim. We know that Rishut Rabim only goes up to 10 tefachim. Anything above 10 tefachim is considered to be a makom ptur. Despite the fact that he lifted this object up and then moved it through the area that's above 10 tefachim, Rava nevertheless says he's chayav, because he moved an object 4 amot in Rishut Rabim. Doesn't matter that you moved it above 10 tefachim. That's Rashi's understanding of Rava. On the other hand, Tosafot favors Rabbeinu Hanano's understanding of Rava, which is that he passed it from his left hand to his right hand. He picked it up with his left hand, passed it to his right hand, and put it down on the other side. Derech Alav means he passed it through his body. You would think maybe because he passed it through its body, that's not called moving 4 amot. You have to move it 4 amot away from you. Here, you're just moving it across your body. Maybe that's not 4 amot. Along comes Rova and says, no, that's considered to be movement, even though you passed it along the front of your body from one hand to the other. So in our case over here, Rashi will read the case, a case where a person standing in Rishut Yachid, he's above 10 tefachim, he reaches down, picks up an object in Rishut Rabim, moves it over and places it down 4 amot later. That's a case of moving something 4 amot b'shut rabim above 10 tefachim, because he's above 10 tefachim, so he's going to move it up above 10 and place it back down. You got our Mishnah say chayav chatat. That supports Rava's understanding that a person who moves it derech alav is chayav chatat. Or, according to Tosafot, in the name of Rabbeinu Hananel, over here a person standing Rishut Yachid picks it up with his left hand, passes it to his right hand, and places it down 4 amot later in Rishut Rabim. Our Mishnah says chayav chatat, again, supportive of that position of Rava, according to Tosafot. So Gemara says, wait a minute. Mikdani Mimotzi Chayav Chatat. Does the Mishnah really say that if you violate the Isur here, with the restriction against moving it 4 amot when you're standing Rishut Yachid, that you're Chayav Chatat? All the Mishnah says is, you shouldn't move it 4 amot. It doesn't tell you the repercussions of moving it 4 amot. Dilma Imotzi Patur Aval Asur. Maybe if he does move it, he's only Chayav Midrabanan. It's Patur. You don't have an obligation Midoraita, but Asur Midrabanan. We don't know what the repercussions are of violating the restriction that the Mishnah lays out. Ikadamri, some have it worded the opposite way around, which is, ha, hotzi, patur, avalasur. They want to say from the Mishnah that if one does move it 4 amot, Mishnah says don't move it 4 amot, but if you do move it 4 amot, patur, avalasur. Lema, tiavi, tiufte, the Rava. Maybe that should be a problem for Rava. The Mishnah says patur, avalasur, which is, as we said before, the same as derech alav that Rava says. Rav says, Yechayev Chatat, yet the Mishnah says, Patur Aval Asur. That would be a problem. That would undermine Rav's position. Dama Rav, Amavir Mitzchilat Dalas, Sof Dal Revealed, Erechalav, Chayev Chatat. And our Mishnah is saying, Patur Aval Asur. Amar again says, Miktani, Hotzi, Patur Aval Asur. Again, the Mishnah never tells us what the repercussions are. So it doesn't say, Chayev Chatat, doesn't say, Patur Aval Asur. Dilma, Imotzi, Chayev Chatat. Maybe the repercussions are that you're Chayev Chatat. So in the end, you could read it either way. If that's the case, it's not a proof and not a disproof to that position of Rava, and our Mishnah, because it doesn't give us the repercussions, doesn't really tell us anything about Rava's memra. And now the Gemara continues, Lo yamod adam b'rishut yachid. In this case, a person in the latter half of the Mishnah may not stand in Rishut Yachid and urinate into Rishut Rabim, or vice versa, stand in Rishut Rabim and urinate into Rishut Yachid. And the same with spitting. A person can spit from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, and vice versa, he cannot spit from Rishut Rabim into Rishut Yachid. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, Hishtin Virak, person who urinates from Rishut Rabim to Rishut Yachid or vice versa, or spits in that, Chayav Chatat, is a violation of an Isur Doraita. In order to have an akira and anacha, one has to take an object off of a place or position where it's at rest, which is over on a significant place or reshut, which is 4x4 tvachim, and place it down on a makom that's dalid, that's 4x4 tvachim. Over here, when a person urinates or a person spits, both it's possibly not landing in a place that's dalid by dalid, but obviously not leaving a place that is dalid by dalid. And so how come he could be chayav achatad over here? He's lacking either an akira or anacha. My answer is, machshevato mishabile makom. That which he thinks makes it into a makom. This is a concept that we say throughout Shas, which is a concept called akshave. A person can grant significance to something. We have it by food, by ochel, by achila. Over here we have it by akira and hanacha. Even though normally akira and hanacha has to come from a makom chashuv, which is dalet al dalet, and go down and be placed down in a place that's dalet by dalet. Here the person isn't doing that. But because akshave, he himself thought to do this. This is what he wants to happen. This is the akira and hanacha that he considers to be of significance, and therefore grants significance to the location of the akira and hanacha, that's as if it left the dalet al dalet and landed in a place that is dalet by dalet. Now Tosafot points out over here that it's important that the akshave is something that's beneficial to him. It's only where he benefits from that location more than another location do we say that it's machshavato, that which he intended for, makes it into a place as if it's dalet al dalet. But if he's indifferent between the place that it landed or the place that it left, and therefore it doesn't matter to him that it left here or landed there, and it's not dalet al dalet, over there we're not going to say akshave, that he gave it consideration or he gave it significance, because to him he's indifferent. He really didn't care if it fell there. So it's only where it's beneficial to him or better situation for him do we say that it's akshave, that he considers it if it's a makom dalet al dalet. Dilo teima hochi, because if you don't say that, ha, damar rova, what are we going to do this member of rova? Zarak benach b'fi akelev. Person throws an object and it lands in the mouth of a kelev, obi of kibshan, or lands in a furnace. Chayav chatat, is chayav chatat. Wait, vabi nanacha gabi makom dalid velega. It has to land in a place that's dalid al dalid, and you don't have that here. The mouth of the kelev and the furnace, neither of them are a makom dalid al dalid. If that's the case, where do you have the anacha to make you chayav chatat? Ella, what do you have to say is machshavoto mishavile makom, that his intent, or that which he wanted, makes it into a significant place, and as Tosafot said, that's where he wanted it to land. He wanted it in the mouth of the dog, he wanted it in the kibshan, and that's more beneficial to him, and that's why it's considered dalet al dalet vachim. Hachanami, also in our case over here, machshavo mishavile makom, whether it's with the spit, or whether it's the urine, the fact that this is his intent, and this is where he wants it to go, and this is where he wants it to leave, the akira and anacha are considered as if they have come from a dalet and landed in a place that's dalet al dalet. The Ri wants to change the girsa a little bit here because he says when Rova says zarak v'nach, nach sounds like it happened by itself. It landed by itself. But over here it's clear we're talking about zarak v'nach is that he had intent for it to land. So therefore he wants to eliminate the word nach, which sounds like a passive landing rather than an active landing or an active intent to have it land somewhere. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel does keep the girsa of zarak v'nach, and he says that you need the extra word halach. If the Gemara uses the term zarak, halach, v'nach, then it would be considered to be a passive landing, because the halach in between is the trajectory of the object, and then the nach happens by itself. Then if you just say zarak v'nach, it means that the throwing or the trajectory goes directly to the landing. And over there, that's considered to be a landing that has intent to it, and therefore, our Gemara still has the girsa of zarak v'nach in it, because we can't explain it that way. Bai Rova. What happens for an individual if he's standing in Rishut Yachid, but his Aver crosses over into the Rishut Rabim and he's urinating now into the Rishut Rabim? Bater Akira Azlina, no Bater Yitzia Azlina. What dictates over here where the Akira happens? Does the Akira happen when it leaves the body? If that's the case, then he's in Rishut Rabim for both. It's leaving the body, it leaves the Aver in Rishut Rabim, because the end of his Aver is in Rishut Rabim, and it lands in Rishut Rabim, so it's all in Rishut Rabim. As long as you're not moving more than Dalet Amot, you'll be fine. On the other hand, if we say that the yitziah depends on where the body takes it out, I mean the body disposes of the urine and then places or it sends it out through the aver, then the body itself is found in the Rishut Yachid, and then it will be considered as if the urine is moving from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim. Gemara leaves this as a teiko, as an unresolved issue, as to where we view the akira of the urine. Do we view it as the akira from the time it leaves the body, I mean at the end of the aver? We look at it as the time that the body is expelling the urine from the body, which is further back within the goof, and then it's pushed out through the aver. And so that akira would come from the goof, which is Birshut Yachid. V'chein lo yorok. The person cannot spit from Birshut Yachid to Birshut Yabim and vice versa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. And then we have Rabbi Yehuda says, it's considered to be a problem not only if he spits, But even if in his mouth you have some of the saliva that detaches or becomes detached, it's not just the natural flow of saliva in the mouth, but there's actually a spittle in his mouth, then that's considered to be problematic and you can't carry it Rishut Rabim. It's equivalent of chewing gum or sucking on a candy Rishut Rabim. You have something in your mouth that you're moving along with, it's considered to be carrying. So Afa Gabdul Hafikba? Mara says here, is it really true that just because it's niklash, it separates out in your mouth and now you have this spittle in your mouth, that that's enough to consider it separate and carrying on Shabbat? Even though you didn't flip it over in your mouth, you didn't do a somersault with it in your mouth in order to indicate that it's really separate. Vatanan, we have a Mishnah found in Kelim. Haya ochel dvela biyadayim misuabot. A person is eating a dvela. Rashi says it's dvela, it's dried figs that are truma. So truma, which can be mekabel, truma will be problematic. But he's eating them biyadayim misuabot. He has hands that are dirty. Now dirty here means tmeim. And stam yadayim are shneot le-tuma. So they're shneot le-tuma. If they engage with liquid, they would make the liquid tamei, and that would affect the figs. It would both makshir them to kabel tuma, and it would make them tamei. So in this case, v'yichnis yado l'toch piv l'toch tzror, puts his hand into his mouth to take out, there was a little rock or a pebble embedded in these dried out pressed figs, and he went to take it out of his mouth. And in taking it out of his mouth, he touches the saliva in his mouth. So once he touches the saliva in his mouth, you have his yadayim, which are stam yadayim are sheni l'tuma. It touches the liquid in his mouth, it makes the liquid tamei. That liquid is both makshir, the truma, as well as mitamei, the truma that's in his mouth. The re over here suggests that it could even be chulin, because we have a principle when it comes to yadayim that touch a liquid, they make the liquid into a rishon, and a rishon, the truma, can affect chulin food, and then you have chulin food, if it's tamei, it's mitamei, the goof of the adam. Even though it's not a revi'it of liquid, it still can make the ochel tamei, and if that ochel is tamei, then there's sufficient ochel in there to make his body tamei. So the Ri says it can even be talking about chulin. Either way, what we have here is the adayim su avot, they're touching the saliva in the mouth, and that's making the dvela tamei. Rabbi Meir mitamei. Rabbi Meir says that truma, that dvela in his mouth, is now tamei. Rabbi Yossi mitaher. Rabbi Yossi says it's tahor. That spittle, that spit that's in his mouth, saliva in his mouth, that's not considered to be a liquid. Rabbi Meir says it is a liquid, and therefore it's a problematic. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, heifach ba tamei, lo heifach ba tahor. The Yehuda takes a middle position and says, if the saliva is a natural saliva of the mouth, and he hasn't done anything to flip it around or detach it, then it's not a liquid, just like Rabbi Yossi says. On the other hand, if he already flipped it around in his mouth, moved it around, so as if it's detached from the natural saliva of his mouth, in that case, it is considered to be a mashkeh, and would be problematic, and would be mitameh the dvei la. So now, that creates a stira between this Mishnah and Kelim and our Mishnah over here. In the Mishnah and Kelim, Rabbi Yehuda only calls it a mashkeh or a liquid after he flips it around in his mouth. Our Mishnah simply says Mishnit Lash. As soon as it detaches, as soon as more liquid than normal in your mouth, and then it's above the normal level of saliva, that already is considered to be problematic in terms of carrying. How do we reconcile Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah in Kelim? Rabbi Yochanan Mukhlevet Ashita. In Ochanami, there's a problem here, and we have to change the authors of the positions in the Mishnah in Kelim. Rabbi Meir will take over the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda will take the position of Rabbi Meir. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda will say Tamei, or Mitamei in the case here in Kelim, which would be consistent with his opinion here in Eruvin. That as soon as the spittle detaches, that's already considered to be a Mashkeh. So over there in Kelim, it'll be Mitamei the Tveila, and over here, it'll be a problem of caring. Rish Lakish, Amar Lulam Lo Tachlif, don't switch around the positions. Achabai Eskinam, Bekechol. There's a difference here between the saliva, the liquid we're talking about in Kelim, and the liquid we're talking about in Eruvin. Kechol, which is a Machlokin in the Rishonim, in the Gemara and Brachot, they know exactly what Kechol is. It is some sort of mucus or phlegm that is in the mouth. It's not the natural saliva, but can be created by someone who's clearing their throat and bringing something up like the phlegm, or someone when their nose is stuffed and then they breathe in, they move that mucus down into their mouth. That could also be what it is over here. But this kecho is mucus or phlegm, something that's in excess of the natural saliva that's flowing through the mouth. So it will distinguish in that way. Kecho does not require you to be heifachba. It's already significant, it's already separated from the saliva, and therefore that phlegm or mucus, right away when you move out with it, you're going to carry it, and it'll be chayav chatat for carrying, or, in our case in Kelim, it would be tamei if the hands touch it. But the Mishnah in Kelim is talking about a case where it's just regular saliva. In that case, in order for it to be considered distinct or distinguished, it has to be a meipachba. He has to flip it over, otherwise it will not be considered to be separate. Now Gemara says, Vatanyo, can you really make such a distinction? That says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kechol v'nitlash, my Kechol v'nitlash. Kechol is this phlegm or mucus, v'nitlash. Now what is v'nitlash in there? The Gemara now is assuming it means Kechol plus rok shenitlash. It's actually two items that are mentioned in that braita. Two things that Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about. So that's what Gemara says, my love, rok v'nitlash. So that it's both rok and it's nitlash. Lo, Kechol v'nitlash. I say, no, it's really one item. It's kechol, that was nitlash. Vatanya. Now we have a braita that's definitive that Rabbi Yehuda sees kechol and rok as the same thing, which is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kechol shenitlash. Chen roko shenitlash, lo yalech dal ramot achi rok. That if a person has this mucus or phlegm that detaches within their mouth, or he has regular saliva that detaches within his mouth, he may not walk dal ramot b'shut rabim. What's clear from this braita is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think there's any distinction between rok and kechol. That's the distinction that Reish Lakish is trying to draw, that kechol is naturally separate and all you need is nitlash, versus rok, which is not naturally separate and you'd have to have a meipachba in order to consider it a separate liquid or separate entity that you be chayav chatat for or be metamei in the case of the Mishnah and Kelim. But what you see from the braita is there is no such distinction within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Obviously this distinction that Reish Lakish is trying to draw does not exist, and therefore we have to go back to Rabbi Yochanan, which you said of Mukhlefet HaShita, and that's the only way to solve the stira between the Mishnah here in Eruvin and the Mishnah in Kelim. Amresh Lakish, Keach, Bifnei Rabo, Chayav Mita. Person who clears his throat and brings up the phlegm, or breathes in his nose and brings the mucus into his mouth in front of his Rebbe, Chayav Mita. Is Chayav Mita Bidei Shamayim for what he did, Shneamar. Bomisanai, Ahevu Mavet. All of those that hate me love death. So that's a simple interpretation of the Pasuk, is that those that are against Hashem, who hate Hashem, or don't do what Hashem wants, they love death, because that's going to be their end game. So, Al Tigra the Misanai, Ela Masnii. So the Gemara says, don't read it as those that hate me, but rather the Masnii. They're those that cause hatred. So now you're causing hatred to me in one of two ways. They cause hatred because of their behavior. It's a Chilul Hashem, what they do. Or the Masnii is that they cause others, like his Rebbe, to be disgusted or feel uncomfortable. And then because of that, he's going to be held accountable for Mavit. Mar says, V'aminis anis. What do you expect from this guy? It's an involuntary action. Here he has phlegm in his throat, he needs to clear it. He has mucus in his nose, he needs to clear it. He has to do something to remove it. But he does, there's nothing wrong with what he did. It's something that's natural, something that is not disgusting. Ella, what's the answer? Is keach virak, Aminan. When we say that he cleared his throat, brought up the phlegm, or got the mucus into his mouth, that's not the end of the story. If that was the end of the story, everything would be fine. But instead, what he does is he spits it out in front of his Rebbe. That's problematic, because that spitting itself is inappropriate. It's not kavod for his Rebbe, and it's disgusting. So if he does that in front of his Rebbe, that's the problem. That's when he's chayav mita. But if he turns away, or if he takes it somewhere else and disposes of it, that wouldn't be a problem. And that's what he should have done. The fact that he didn't do that and spit it out in front of his Rebbe is a lack of respect for his Rebbe, as well as creating a chilul Hashem or causing others discomfort. And that he will be held accountable for, and that's what he says he's chayav mita for. Next Mishnah. Lo yamod adam b'rshut yachid v'yishteh b'rshut rabim. A person should not stand in the private domain and drink in the public domain. B'rshut rabim, stand in the public domain v'yishteh b'rshut yachid and drink in the b'rshut yachid. Elim geni ichnis roshov rubo l'makom shu shuteh. And unless he moves the majority of his body and his head to the location where he is drinking. V'chein begat. And the same is true when it comes to a press. Now, Gemara is going to discuss this in one second, but let's just understand that the problem that we're worried about here is not the water itself. The drinking of the water, the fact that the water moves through your body and ends up in a place that's somewhere else, we don't have any issue with that. So if you're drinking the water in the Shudra Chid, and then it moves through your body to the Shudra Abim, that we're not worried about, and vice versa also. What we're really fearful of over here is that you're going to take the object by which you are drinking and bring it back to you, or you'll bring the water back to you. We're afraid of you actually moving the object, whether it's the cup or whether it's the water, back to you from the Shudra Chid to the Shudra Abim. So if we force you to be Rosho Berubo in that location, then number one, you'll remember. Number two is you'll have no incentive to bring it back to you because you are in the location where the water is. And you won't bring the keli back or you won't bring the water back. And that's the solution of the Mishnah. Now, Gemara says, Reisha Rabbanon v'Sefer Rabbi Meir. I don't understand now because the Mishnah we read yesterday sounds like the Rabbanon. Over there, it says you are permitted to do things when you're standing in Rishut Yechid and vice versa. It was permitted. That's the day of the Rabbanon. And that we saw in yesterday's daf, whether according to Rashi, because Rabbi Meir later on in this parak says Divrei Rabbi Meir, so we know Rabbi Meir has that opinion, or whether we know that it's according to Tosfot from somewhere else, but we know what Rabbi Meir's opinion is, that we don't allow you to move things when you're in Rishut Yachid into in the Rishut Rabbim. So this Mishnah here sounds like Rabbi Meir. The previous Mishnah sounds like the Rabbonon. So that's what Gemara says, Reisha Rabbonon, that the previous Mishnah here, according to the Shita of the Rabbonon. Our Mishnah now that we just read is according to Rabbi Meir. So Amar Rabbi Yosef, no, you don't have to say that. Bechafitzim shetzrichim lo. He's dealing with utensils that he needs in the location where he is. And therefore, we can say it even according to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan don't worry about the fact that if you're standing in Rishut Yachid and drinking Rishut Rabim, they have no problem with that, both from the water and from the keli standpoint, and vice versa as well. The only time they worry about it is if you need, for instance, the cup that you drink with, you need it in your house. Then if you're standing in your house and drinking from the Rishut Rabim with that cup, we're afraid you're going to bring it back in. In that case, there's a real chashash that you will bring it back in. It's a necessity for you. You want it. Plus, you might forget about it because of the situation in which you are placing yourself. In that case, even the Rabbanan will agree to Rabbi Meir that we don't allow you to do it unless Rosh Ovarubo, unless the Rosh, your head, and the Rov, your body is over there so that you don't come to this problem and you won't bring an object back to you in the Rishut HaYachid if you're standing in Rishut HaYachid, or in the Rishut HaRabim if you're standing in the Rishut HaRabim. But what that does say is when we don't have a case where it's something that he needs in the house, the Rabbanan would say, fine, you could just drink. Stand Rishut HaYachid, drink normally in the Rishut HaRabim and vice versa. Whereas Rabbi Meir, in both instances, will require you to put Rosh Ovarubo over the other side in order to not allow you to bring the object back, whether that's in a case where you need the object or a case where you don't need the object. So now Gemara says, Yibayelu, Karmelit Mai. This whole mission is talking about cases when we're dealing with two Rishuyot D'oraita. We're dealing with Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim. What's the story when it comes to a Karmelit? A Karmelit, which is a Rishut HaRabanan, person standing in a Karmelit and then leaning over into Rishut HaRabim to drink. Does he have the same restrictions or the same requirements as our Mishnah that Rosh Ovarubo has to be in Rishut HaRabim? Or, do we say, since it's a Rishut HaRabanan, and at worst, if he brings the cup back or brings the water back, he's only in violation of Isur HaRabanan, then we're not going to force him to lean over. Abar Abayi, hihi. Abayi says it's the same din. The din of Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid is the same din as Karmelit and Rishut HaRabim. Nothing changes, it's the same din. Amar Rava, hi gufa gzeira, anan hikum and gzor gzeira gzeira. Rava says, this basically turns out to be a gzeira to a gzeira. We don't usually allow that to happen. We allow the Chachamim to put a mishmeret, to put a guard around the Torah, but we don't let them put out multiple gates around the Torah. So in this case, Karmelit itself is already a gzeira. We don't let you carry from a Karmelit into Rishut HaRabim, because the person might make a mistake then and carry from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid. That's one gzeira. We have a separate gzeira that when a person is standing in Rishut HaYachid and leaning over into Rishut HaRabim and drinking, we make him put Rosh Ovarubo into Rishut HaRabim because we're afraid of him bringing the cup or the water back to him into Rishut HaYachid. That's a gzeira. Now, if you want to say that when a person's in a Karmelit and he's leaning over into Rishut HaRabim, he has to do Rosh Ovarubo, now you end up with what we call a gzeira l'gzeira. We have a gzeira already that Karmelit's problematic for bringing things from Rishut HaRabim into it. That's one drabonon. And on top of that, you want to add an additional drabonon which says you must have Rosh Ovarubo and Rishut HaRabim in order to drink to prevent you from bringing something from Rishut HaRabim into Karmelit, which is also only an Isur drabonon or gzeira drabonon. And that we don't do. We don't do a gzeira l'gzeira. There are times where the Gemara says, gzeira achati, it's one big gzeira, that once they establish that, for instance, in this case, a Karmelit as being the equivalent of Rishut HaYachid, the Gabei Rishut HaRabim, then all the dinim will apply equally. But the Gemara clearly doesn't think that, or Rava doesn't think that in this case, and he sees it as a gzeira l'gzeira. Amar Abayi minaya minulo, I can prove it to you from our Mishnah that my position is correct. Because, Minitani, it says in our Mishnah, v'chein legat. At the end of our Mishnah, it says that it's talking about a press. What is different at a press than versus what we saw earlier in the Mishnah? If you say that this gat, this press is a Rishut HaYachid, and it says you can't stand in Rishut HaYachid and drink from Rishut HaBim to Rishut HaYachid, that's the same as the ratio of the Mishnah. The ratio already spoke about the case of Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaBim. What do I need v'chein the gat to teach me that? Ella, it must be that the gat is a Karmelit. And in the gat is being a Karmelit, our Mishnah says v'chein the gat. The same din applies to a gat as applies to a Rishut HaRabim. So now what is Rava going to do with that? That seems to be a very strong support for Abai's position that our Mishnah considers a Karmelit problematic, and you would have to lean over to the Rishut HaRabim in order to drink there. Amar Rava, Amar L'inyan Maser, V'chein L'gat in our Mishnah is not about an issue of Shabbat, it's an inyan in Maser and Truma. V'chein Amar Rav Sheshit, and similarly Rav Sheshit says the same thing, V'chein L'gat L'inyan Maser. The gat in our Mishnah has to do with the din in Maser. We're going to read that Mishnah 1 second, but just as background, when it comes to eating fruits, drinking items that require one to take off Trumot and Masrot. One is only obligated to take off Trumot and Masrot if they have what's called a Chilat Keva. If they have something that which is a fixed meal, something where it's reached a point where the item is now considered to be complete and a person would sit down and eat it in a meal in this fashion. Whereas if a person eats it Achilat Arai, eats it on the fly as a snack, then he does not have to be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot. That's as long as it hasn't reached the point of Gemar Melacha. Over here in the Gat, it's still, the wine is still in the press. It hasn't reached the point where it's either fermented or reached the point where it's necessarily chayav in Trumot HaMasrot. Therefore, if he drinks it in the gat, if he drinks it in a way that's a chilat arai, he would not be chayav in maser. On the other hand, if it's already considered to be a chilat keva when he takes the drink out of the gat, then he would be chayav in Trumot HaMasrot. And that's what this Mishnah in Maser is speaking about. It's not. Shotim al gat ben bechamim ben mitzonein. The Tana Gamma believes over here that one can drink wine from the gat. You take the wine and then you dilute it. You can dilute it with cold water or you can dilute it with hot water. Doesn't matter which one you use. Upatur. He does not have to separate off Maserot and Trumot. It's considered to be an achilat arai, a temporary type of eating that does not require a fashad Trumot HaMasrot. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Eliezer bar Tzadok mechayev. Rabbi Elazar ben Sarov says, if you diluted already, that's called achilat keva, and you for sure have to take off shuvot masrot in both cases. The chachamim have an in-between position, which is, al chachamim chayav, al tzonein patur. If he dilutes it with hot water, then he is chayav to take off trumot masrot. If he dilutes it with cold water, then he does not have to take off trumot masrot. What's the difference between hot water or cold water? Patur mipnei shemakzirat amotar. Because the difference is whether you return the residual back to the press or into the pit. In a case where you dilute it with hot water, then you will not pour it back into the pit because the hot water will either ruin the grape juice that's there or the wine that's there, and it'll affect the fermentation process and ruin the wine. So nobody uses hot water to dilute their wine when they take it out of the pit will ever pour that back. That means now the only thing you're going to do is drink the cup and the whole cup, and that becomes achilat keva. So because of that, you'll have to take off trumot masrot. On the other hand, if you dilute it with cold water and you decide you don't want to finish it, you can just dump it back into the gat. Because the additional water that you put in there and you dump back into the gat will not affect the fermentation process or the nature of the grape juice that's in there. And therefore, a person would be willing to pour it back. So that means you could take a sip and then dump it back in, and it would be considered achilat arai. That is the distinction the Chachamim make between whether it's diluted with hot water or cold water. So you have the position of Rabbi Meir, who says you never have to take off trumot masrot. It doesn't matter hot water or cold water. We have Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, who says that either way, whether it's cold or hot, you do have to be mafrish trumot masrot. They have their abundance position, which is the middle position. It's hot water, you have to be mafrish trumot masrot. That's keva, because you won't pour it back in. Cold water, which you would pour back in, is considered to be an achilat arai, and therefore you would not have to take off trumot and masrot. Now, how does that help Rava? Now let's go back to our Mishnah. V'chein legat, we just said before that our Mishnah would be authored by Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says there's a problem of moving objects when you're in the Rishut Yachid, moving objects in the Rishut Rabbim. V'chein legat is Rabbi Meir the Shitato. Rabbi Meir the Shitato is, the only time I let you drink from the gat and consider it to be an achilat arai is when Rosho V'rubo is hanging over into the gat. If you bring up the cup and take it away from the gat, that's going to be achilat keva. What's considered to be achilat arai is when you're drinking directly over the gat. You're leaning in there and drinking right over it. That's considered to be achilat arai, and you'll be patur for trumot masrot. And that's what it means in our Mishnah, v'chein begat. V'chein begat is Rabbi Meir, who says in our Mishnah, you can't drink in the Rishut Rabbim when you're in the Rishut Yachid, unless you put Rosho V'rubo over, hanging over into the Rishut Rabbim. Same is true by a gat. As long as your Rosho V'rubo are hanging over the gat, you're patur from trumot masrot. If that's not the case, then we worry about you bringing it back, taking it out, and making it into a shtiyat keva, achilat keva, and you would be chayav in trumot masrot. And that's how Rav is going to explain v'chein begat in our Mishnah, which has nothing to do with Shabbat. It's a din in maaser. And that din is consistent in the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's opinion here in this Mishnah, as well as Rabbi Meir's opinion there in Maaser. But it does eliminates the proof that Abaye had to the fact that the gat here is a Carmelite. It has nothing to do with Shabbat. It has nothing to do with Carmelite. It's a different Chiddush. Nothing to do with Shabbat. And you can't prove from our Mishnah that a Carmelite would have the same din as a Rishut HaYachid in that Mishnah. Next Mishnah. A person can catch water out of the air from a drain pipe, a gutter, below 10 tefachim. Uminat Sinor, if you're talking about the lead or the drain pipe, then you can even put the cup directly up against it and drink from it. So let's understand our Mishnah. First of all, when it comes to their time, they had flat roofs. On their flat roofs, they used to have small areas along the roof that allowed for water to drain off. And similar to us, they had gutters that ran along the sides of the wall that caught the water and then took the water away from the roof of the house and deposited it somewhere else. Those pipes that are along the sides, or gutters that are along the side of the roof like we have today, are called the mazchilot. Those are the gutters. On the other hand, they have something called a tzinor. The tzinor is equivalent today of what we call a lead. A leader is something that comes off the gutter, takes the water from the gutter, and deposits it down below, whether it takes it into the sewer system or whether it takes it out into the yard. That leader is something that takes the water away from the house and pushes it away, or it's, in other words, it's called a drain pipe. Now, the difference between them is that the gutter, which is up by the roof, is batel to the gag. It's as if it's a part of the gag. On the other hand, the drain pipe, which deposits the water and extends beyond the house, away from the house, away from the roof, is not considered to be part and parcel of the house. Why does this matter? The case here is a case where he's standing in Rishut Rabbim. And standing in Rishut Rabbim, he wants to collect the water. Now, if he takes his cup and he places it right up against the gutter, it looks like he's taking water directly from the Rishut Yachid, and now he's taking it down into the Rishut Rabbim. Looks like he's moving it from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabbim. Now, truthfully, he's not, because the water is not Rishut Yachid, and neither is the gutter. But because the gutter is within 3 tvachim of the roof, and now when he places the cup up there, he's within that range, it looks like he's taking the water directly from the roof down into the Rishut Rabbim, and that we will not allow. On the other hand, if he catches the water mid-air, and he's below 10 tvachim, then he's catching the water in the Rishut Rabbim already. And that we'll be fine with, because the water itself is not problematic. The water itself is not Rishut Yachid, doesn't have any shame Rishut to it. And since it passes through a gutter, which is, in other words, a makom p'tur, It's an area that's not four tefachim wide. The only reason it has any status is because it's close to the Gog. So then when you put up your cup close to it, we'll worry about it. But when you put your cup far away and the water comes flying down into your cup, that will be fine, and that'll be mutar on Shabbat. Whereas, when you deal with the tzinor, the drain pipe or the leader that comes off the gutter, over there, when you put your cup there, it's already pushed the water. The pipe moves more than three tefachim away from the roof or away from the house. And in that case, it doesn't look like you're taking it from a shud yachid and bringing it to the shud rabim. You might, at most, you're taking it from a makom p'tur. In that case, you can put the cup directly up against the pipe, take the water, and then take it down wherever you want. That's our Mishnah. Now the Gemara explains. What's clear from the ratio of the Mishnah is that you can catch the water out of the air, but you can't put your cup directly against the pipe. My time up. Why not? We're dealing with a gutter or a pipe that's within three tefachim of the roof. Anything that's within three tefachim of the roof is like the roof. And since it's like the roof, that means that it has a status like a Rishut HaYachid. And again, it'll look like a person's moving something from Rishut HaYachid into a Rishut HaRabim. And so even though this gutter might be below 10 Tvachim, nevertheless, since it's adjacent to the roof, it has a din like the roof, and it looks like a Rishut HaYachid, and then you can't catch the water directly off the pipe. But if you catch it out of the air, we no longer have that problem. Tanya Namiyachid, we have a braita that supports that understanding in our Mishnah. Omer Adam Rishut HaYachid, a person can stand in a private area, Magbeh Yado L'malo Mi'asarat Tefachim, put his hand up above 10 Tefachim, L'fachot Mishlosha Samuch Tegag, within 3 Tefachim of the Gag, V'kuleit, and catch the water. He can still catch the water out of the air, Uvach Lo Yitzareif, as long as he doesn't put the cup directly up against that gutter pipe. Tanya Yidach, have another braita that says something similar, the Omer Adam Rishut HaYachid, he shouldn't pick up his hand above 10 tefachim. That's within 3 tefachim of the gag. And take the cup and put it directly against the gutter and catch it. You can catch it out of the air and not worry about it. So both brachot would say the same thing, which is that when the gutter is within 3 tefachim of the roof, or you're within 3 tefachim of the roof, then mitzareif is a problem because it looks like you're taking from shur yachid to shur abim. Whereas, if you're a kolate, if you catch it out of the air, we don't worry about it, because it's really not Rishut HaChin to Rishut HaBim. When you're catching it out of the air, it's not an issue. That's Rashi's girsa in the Gemara. Tosafot brings a girsa from the Rabbeinu Hananel, that one of the brachot over here is a case where he's omeid b'Rishut HaRabim, not omeid b'Rishut HaYachid. Tosafot in the end favors Rashi's interpretation, that's what we'll follow here, that he's standing in Rishut HaYachid. What Tosafot points out over here is that we had before different opinions as to what the status of Gagim are, status of roofs. Over here, the water is coming off of his friend's roof, into his roof, or down to his roof. So what is the problem? According to Rabbi Meir, the roofs are Rishut Achat. We don't have any issue. According to the Chachamim, it's Kol Echad is a Rishut Bifnei Atzmo, so I understand why you can't catch the water from your friend's roof and bring it down to your roof. For Rabbi Meir, who says that all the roofs are Rishut Achat, what's the problem here? And same with Rabbi Shimon, who clearly says they're Gagim are Rishut Achat, what's the issue over here? So Tosafot, first of all, says Rabbi Meir, it works over here as well, because we just said over here, it's the Malami Yud Tfachim. The other roof is more than 10 Tfachim away from where you are on your roof. If that's the case, then even Rabbi Meir agrees when the roofs are more than 10 tefachim away from each other, up and down, then we have gzer mishum tel b'shut rabim, and you can't move it from roof to roof. So then it would work well according to Rabbi Meir as well. The only problem is Rabbi Shimon. Tosafot comes up a way to have this be even according to Rabbi Shimon, but in the end he says it's such a dochak to explain Rabbi Shimon within this context of being multiple roofs and not allowing the water to come, that he says in the end it just gives it up and says Rabbi Shimon will clearly argue over here. Even though we could fit him in, it's better just to say that he's arguing on this position over here because he believes that all the gagim are Rishut Achad and you could move the water from one to the other. In addition, Tosafot says the case must be here where the water was not shuvet on that roof before Shabbat. If the water was shuvet on your friend's roof before Shabbat, then that water becomes part and parcel of your friend's roof of Rishut Achid. And then it really would be problematic for taking it from there out into the Rishut HaRabim, or taking it from there to your area without any roof, because it belonged to your friend. On the other hand, if the water came there on Shabbat itself, and then it's moving through the gutters or flowing out down to you, in that case, it doesn't have Shvita in your friend's area. If you catch it out of the air, we're not going to worry about it. This is free-flowing water, doesn't have Shvita, doesn't have belong to any specific location, and that's why you can capture it on Shabbat. So Tosafot says it has to be a case there where he's catching the water on Shabbat and it's moving. But if it was Shovet on his friend's roof before Shabbat, he could not bring it down to his roof, because that would be a problem moving it from one roof to the other without any roof. And that would be a problem for the Chachamim for sure, and even according to Rabbi Meir, because you're more than 10 Tefachim away from each other. Then the Gemara says about the tzinor. The tzinor, the lead pipe, or the leader, or the drain pipe, if you're catching from there, you can put your cup right up against it and catch the water. So the Gemara says, Tanam, Yeshu tzinor, dalet al dalet. If the end of the pipe widens out, you see that today many times, at the end of the leader, the end of this drain pipe, they have a pan that's there that spreads out to spread the water, or spray the water in different directions. If you have that at the end of this pipe, then it's problematic to even be mitzareif. It looks like you're taking it out from one area to another area. As long as the pipe remains a makom patur because it's less than 4 tefachim wide, then we don't worry about you taking from the water directly from the pipe into your cup. On the other hand, if the end of the pipe is more than 4 tefachim wide, I mean, if the whole pipe's 4 tefachim wide, right, for sure, but it's more likely that the pipe won't be 4 tefachim wide, but the end of the pipe will be 4 tefachim wide, that already makes that area into a reshut bifnei atzmo. And as a reshut bifnei atzmo, then it looks like you're taking from the Carmelites into the area that you're standing into the reshut rabim, and that we won't allow. And so you cannot be mitzarif your cup in that case between the tzinor, and you can't place your cup directly up against the tzinor. You'd have to do what you did with the mazikhila before, which is have it catch it out of the air so that it doesn't look like you're taking from the reshut yachid, or in this case, possibly a Carmelite, to the reshut rabim. So in conclusion here, when it comes to a mazikhila, a gutter pipe that is tzamud lagag, which is close to the roof, it's within 3 tefachim of the roof, then whether the gutter is found above 10 tefachim or whether the gutter is found below 10 tefachim, it doesn't matter, because we say since it's close to the gag, it's batel to the gag and becomes as if it is a reshut yachid. And in that case, if you're standing in reshut rabim and you want to collect the water from it, if the water exits and you catch it midair, that's fine. But what you won't be allowed to do is take your cup and put it directly up against the pipe. That doesn't matter whether it's below 10 tefachim and you're both quote-unquote in the reshut rabim, because the gutter is still batel to the gag, because it's close to the gag or adjacent to the gag, and therefore it's considered like a reshut yachid. And of course, if it's above 10 tefachim, you certainly can't put your cup or your mouth up against the pipe to drink the water. You can only catch it out of the air. On the other hand, when it comes to tzinor, who's defined by the fact that it empties out more than 3 tefachim away from the roof, that's been considered to be a separate entity. Since it's a separate entity, therefore it's a makom patur, and from a makom patur into reshut rabim is fine. And therefore, if it's below 10 tefachim, and you're in the reshut rabim, you're taking from a makom tour into reshut rabim, you can put your mouth or your cup directly up against it, take the water out. You obviously can catch it out of the air, but you can even do it directly against the pipe. On the other hand, if it's above 10 tefachim, the tzinor, then we won't allow you to put your cup up against it. Even though technically it's still a makom tour, over there, Tosafot mentions, based on the Girsa of Rashi and from the Tosefta, that above 10 tefachim, the Rabbanan would go there, that you can't take the water from there directly because it's up above 10 tefachim or choshesh that maybe it'll be a Carmelite or maybe a shut yachid. And therefore, if it's above 10 tefachim, you can't place your cup or your mouth directly against the pipe. You also have to catch it out of the air. Now, even with the pipe that is below the tzinor, that is below 10 tefachim, that's only when the pipe itself is less than 4 tefachim wide, or the exit from the pipe is less than 4 tefachim wide. On the other hand, if the pipe itself is 4 tefachim wide, or the exit is 4 by 4 tefachim, then it turns into a Carmelite when it's below the 10 tefachim. If that's the case, then you have a problem of Carmelite to reshut rabim. And over there, you will not be allowed to place the cup or your mouth directly up against the pipe. You'll have to catch it out of the air rather than up directly against the pipe. So in conclusion, the only time that you could place your cup or your mouth directly against the pipe is, number one, if it's a sinor, which means it's more than 3 tefachim away from the gag. Number two is it's below 10 tefachim. And number three is that the pipe or the end of the pipe is less than 4 by 4 tefachim. That is the instance in where you can put your mouth or cup directly against the pipe. Otherwise, you'll have to catch the water out of the air and not put the item directly against the pipe to catch the water. Okay, now, next Mishnah. Bor b'reshut rabim. You have a bor out in the reshut rabim. V'chaliyato gvoat yud tefachim. And the dirt that you pile around the bor goes up to 10 tefachim. Chalon shel gabav. If a person has a window that hangs over this area, memalim emenu. He could throw his bucket out. His house is reshut yachid. Throws the bucket out into the boar, which is a reshut yachid, and he draws the water and brings it into his house without any problem. So you can do that b'Shabbat. B'ashpa, if you have a garbage dump, b'reshut rabim, gavoa yud tefachim, that's 10 tefachim high, chalon shel gabav, if you have a window that overlooks that dump, shofchim letocha mayim b'Shabbat, he can pour his sewage water, his garbage, out his window right into the pile. His house is a reshut yachid. The garbage that's piled up in reshut rabim is 10 tefachim high by 4 by 4 wide. That's already a reshut yachid. He can dump his stuff out without any problem into this ashpa. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, p'maya skinan. What's the case here? Ilema mismucha. If the case here is that the boor, the cistern, is right up against the wall of the house, lamali chuyayud, then why do I need the dirt on top of the boor that's 10 tefachim high in order to allow him to drop the bucket down? If it's within a close proximity to the house, then all he's doing is taking from reshut yachid his house, dumping into the boar. The boar itself is a reshut yachid, and he's drawing the water. It's at least 4 tefachim away from the wall. So now, if he doesn't have the chulia, then you have a problem. Why? Only because he has the dirt that's piled up 10 tefachim high, does it help him out? How leka chuli asara? But if he didn't have that pile of 10 tefachim high, kamatalto mishud yachid or shud yachid derech mishud rabim, and he's carrying from the boar, he's taking the water out of the boar, which is shud yachid, passing over a shud rabim, that 4 tefachim space between the boar and the wall of his house, that's mishud rabim. So he's crossing over that mishud rabim and then bringing the water into his house, which is shud yachid. Shud yachid to mishud yachid derech mishud rabim. So we won't allow that. But if he has a chulia there, if he has a pile of dirt around the boar that's 10 tefachim high over there, then first of all, he's impeded the access of Rishut Rabim to that area, so that's clearly not Rishut Rabim anymore, but also the fact that the chulia is now 10 tefachim high makes it into a separate Rishut. If it's 4x4, then it'll be a Rishut Yachid, and if it's less than 4x4, then the chulia becomes a Makom Patur. And then he's only moving from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Yachid with a Makom Patur in between, and that's not the problem. So therefore, the chulia solves the problem of moving from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Yachid Terech Rishut Rabim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Tema Bismucha. Yochanan says that we can even say the case here is when it's up against the wall. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah there? If it's up against the wall, you can take from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Yachid. That's obvious. Hagamashalan debor v'chuliyato mitzarfim la'atzara. That comes to teach us that both the cistern itself and the dirt piled around it, they can be added together to get your 10 tefachim. You don't have to have 10 tefachim deep in the bor. You don't have to have the dirt on top be 10 tefachim. They can be 5 each and added together to get the 10 tefachim to make the requisite amount to be a Rishut Yachid. And that's what the chiddush of the Mishnah is, that the chulia and the boar are mitzarev, joined together to make the 10 tefachim high. Ashba b'rishut rabim. Where it says, v'lo chayshina and shemitin atel ashba. Why aren't we worried about the fact that they might clear away this garbage dump here? It's in the rishut rabim. Why aren't we worried they're going to clear it away? If they clear it away and he continues to dump his garbage out the window, now he's really dumping from rishut yachid into rishut rabim and he's violating an isu d'oraita. So why are we going to let him put the garbage or the sewage out his window into this ashba, when there's a possibility that the ashpa will disappear? It was his case with this one mavoy, one side ended up by the embankment of the river or the ocean, another side ended up at a garbage dump. Obama said, "Lifnei Rabbi," and the case that came before Rabbi, he wasn't willing to be osir and he wasn't willing to be matir. What is the case over here? Rashi claims the case over here is the case where you have a mavoy. A mavoy that ends up by the houses, by the chatzerot of the houses. For the right wall of the mavoy and the left wall of the mavoy, the right wall is made up of the yam. The bank of the river or the ocean is more than 10 tefachim high. That's the right wall for that mavoy. The left wall for that mavoy is made up of a garbage dump. So now you have walls on both sides. One the yam, one the garbage. One side's open to Rishut Rabim. That's fine. That's the nature of a mavoy. You have to put a lechi or a korah over there. The other side or the end of the mavoy is what opens up as doorways in the wall opens up into chatzerot or into the houses that are there. That's the mavoy that we're talking about over here. The Ritva and other Rishonim believe that, no, there are two real walls on the left and right. And it's the back wall of the mavoy or the front wall of the mavoy that are either being blocked by a yam or blocked by a ashpa. And they're making up the third or fourth walls of this mavoy. In either case, Rebbe over there says he wasn't willing to be Oser the mavoy, but he also wasn't willing to be Matir the mavoy. Why not? Because, Petalo Amarbo, he wasn't willing to be Matir, Techashin and Shemitina Telashpa. Because we're afraid that the garbage run might be cleared out, and then you won't have that wall anymore. Over Yalea Yam Sirton, or the ocean will overflow, it'll come over the banks, it'll lift up the sediment, and then it'll flatten out the area where there's no longer an embankment of 10 tefachim, and then it will be problematic. So he wasn't willing to be matir for the fear of something going wrong later on. Yisr lo amar bo, he wasn't willing to be oser now, mechitzot. At this point, the mechitzot are there. At this point, this mavoy is a fine mavoy, and you could carry it if you put up a lechi and a korah. So right now, it's mutar. What he's afraid of is what will happen in the future, and because of that fear of the future, he's unwilling to be matir it today. But he's also not willing to be oser it. But what we see from that case over there is that we are choshesh for the ashpa being taken away. We are choshesh that the garbage dump will be taken away. Why in our mission are we not worried about that? Gemara says, Lokasha, hadi yochid, hadi rabim. Depends who the garbage dump belongs to. Our mission is talking about a public garbage dump. Public garbage dumps are going to remain dumps and they're not going to get moved. So over there we're not worried about the garbage dump moving and therefore you can throw his stuff and his sewage out into that ashpa because that's going to be there for a long time. That's going to be a permanent fixture here. But then, if you're talking about Ashbat Yachid, an area where a person stores their garbage or places their garbage, that they could change any time. That could be temporary. And therefore, we would worry about them removing it. If they're going to remove it, then you lose, in the case of Rabbi, the wall. Or in our case of here, you lose the ability to throw the Ashbat out. So that's the distinction that the Gemara says in the end to reconcile to our Braita that we had before about the story about Rabbi, which is in our Mishnah, we're talking about a case where it's Ashbat Rabim, which we don't fear is going to be taken away. That's something that's going to remain there permanently. On the other hand, the case by Rabbi is a case where it was an Ashpad Yachid. And over there, we do have a fear that someone will move it away or change it. And because of that, we're not going to let you, in our case, throw things out the window into it. Or in the case of Rabbi, we're not going to be Matur the Mavoy for the fear that it might change, the dynamic might change later on. Okay, we'll stop over here.